Hey, good morning. My name is Lance Rodewald, and this is Nancy Fasano, and she and I get to co-moderate this session called Supporting the Immunizing Clinicians. And I have the disclosure form to read, and so I'll go ahead and read this. CDC, our planners, and the presenters in the session wish to disclose they have no financial interests or other relationships with the manufacturers of commercial products, suppliers of commercial products, or commercial supporters. Presentations in the session will not include any discussion of unlabeled use of a product or a product under investigational use, with the possible exception that Allison Singer, who may discuss and explain the dangers of non-evidence-based treatments for autism. There's no commercial support for this activity. So I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Dr. Ed Marcuse. And Ed Marcuse is somebody who I've known for a long time, and he's been an immunization champion for his whole career, and he also believes in brevity. He has a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 line bio that he submitted. So let me read this. He's an academic general pediatrician at Seattle Children's, where he's professor of pediatrics, an adjunct professor at the University of Washington. He has had a career-long interest in immunization and has served on NVAC, ACIP, and the Red Book Committee. I'm informed that his car's license plate is DTAP-IPV, and he has titled his remarks, "There Never Was an Age of Reason." So that sounds quite intriguing. Let's welcome Dr. Ed Marcuse.
Good morning. Thank you, Lance. Let's see if all systems here are go. Good. Well, it will come as no surprise to anyone in this audience that many parents have doubts about vaccines. Overall, although more than two-thirds of parents have no doubts, a significant group, numbering somewhere between 25 and 30%, do. And what's particularly alarming is that refusal or delay of vaccines seems to be increasing, and even after adjusting for the number of vaccines that have been added to the schedule in recent years, the number has increased from 22% to 39%. So this is a major issue. Now, fundamentally, this is a discussion about values. What should the balance be between the state's duty to protect the public health and an individual's right of free choice? At what point does an individual's choice actually get trumped by the need to protect the public health? A number of questions have been raised about this in recent months. Should there be liability to those who opt out? And ultimately, who decides what the balance between these rights should be? The subject of philosophic exemptions has been, again, one of concern. And I use this slide simply to make a major point. The states in blue are the states with the 10 highest immunization rates. The states in orange are those with the lowest immunization rates. And those marked with an asterisk are those which have philosophic exemptions. And so my point here is simply that there is no direct correlation between philosophic exemptions and immunization rates. It is a more complex issue. Well, who should make policy about this? Preparing for this talk, I ran across these two quotes, which I rather like, from an old IOM report on the future of public health. That many health professionals regard politics as a contaminant of an ideal decision-making process rather than an essential part of democratic governance. And that the role of public health is bringing knowledge and values together to shape an approach to a public health problem. A recent editorial in the New England Journal troubled me in some ways because it characterized all who raised questions about vaccines as not able to understand concepts of risk and suggested they were of low cognitive complexity. I think it's important to differentiate between what a colleague of mine refers to as the intentional misinformers and civil libertarians and vaccine-hesitant parents who have safety concerns. Perceptions about vaccine safety are inherently subjective. Fear of disease versus fear of vaccines. And good science is absolutely essential. Make no mistake about that, but it's not sufficient because often fears about vaccines are not entirely rational. They're based on fear, lack of trust, faith in alternative health beliefs. And while good science is absolutely essential, science is complex. The conclusions often change. There is a lot of junk, and as we've learned recently, actually fraudulent. Fortunately, that's rare science out there. And safety concerns are presented as scientifically plausible, making it hard to differentiate what is true. Two slides from a prior National Immunization Conference speaker I think are very helpful. On issues of relatively low concern, expertise is important. But on issues that are of high concern, listening, caring, factors other than competence are most important. A wonderful quote attributed to Will Rogers, "When people are stressed, they want to know that you care before they care about what you know." So, actually, this is sort of the point of my whole talk, that for intentional misinformers, we need to play hardball, but with a concerned parent who wants only to do what is best for their child and is having trouble figuring that out, we need to play softball. Parents really do want to do what is best for their child, but they don't know what to believe. They are influenced very much by the community in which they live. They are influenced by their healthcare providers, and they are increasingly influenced by the media and the internet. And the media and the internet have both public health voices and anti-vaccine voices. A group of us in Washington State have created a collaboration called Vax Northwest to address immunization hesitancy. We have the dubious distinction of, I think, leading the nation in vaccine exemptions. The maps on that slide, the reddish, dark reddish color is the maximum number of exemptions greater than 10%. The map shows our counties and the change in exemptions from over the last decade. Well, we are designing and implementing and evaluating two innovative interventions, which I'm going to describe in a couple of minutes, one for clinicians and one for communities. Now, there are formidable barriers to communicating to parents about immunization. First, the parent may be reluctant to even raise questions. They want an open dialogue, but may not know how to initiate it and may be afraid of offending. And they are not particularly receptive to public health messages about what is good for our community. Often, they simply have a baby that they are trying to figure out how best to care for. Providers are also often reluctant to enter into this dialogue today. Primary care providers are under severe time constraints. They may not be up to date on the latest about the somewhat obscure safety concerns. They may fear becoming enmeshed in a discussion with a parent, and they have the burden of responsibility of wanting to protect this infant, sometimes even despite the parent. So our clinical intervention is designed to facilitate a dialogue between a provider and a parent. We've done a number of things to do this. We've developed a toolkit. We've tested it in an HMO, and we are hope soon to be able to launch a clustered randomized controlled trial of primary care practices to try and demonstrate its efficacy. So the point of this is that in communicating between provider and parent, there are some styles that facilitate that communication and others that impede it. Styles that enhance are respectful, above all, respectful. They are collaborative. They emphasize that parents do have a choice. Styles that prove counterproductive are ones that are judging, labeling, authoritarian, and kind of lecturing. So the kinds of messages we are trying to assist providers to convey is that they understand that parents want to do what's best for their children and communicate to the parent that so do they. They tell parents that they know they feel bombarded with conflicting information and don't know who to believe, that they recognize that science simply does not provide all the answers to health issues that concern them, but that it is, in fact, the best tool we have to get reliable answers to important questions. I find it useful to say to a parent that I wish I could make the world completely safe for their child, but I can't. There are important threats to that child's health and safety I can't do a lot about, but there's some where I really can make a difference, and I can help a parent get the best information available so that they can make a fully informed decision. And I try to provide them with information that is unrelated to vaccine manufacturers, because there's a great fear that that information is somehow contaminated by economic interest. So our community intervention, as distinct from the one I just described, which focuses on the clinician-parent interaction, our community intervention has the underlying rationale that parents gather information and form opinions through social networks. And the voice of the immunizing parent, even though that's more than two-thirds of parents, is often unheard. And I think that may be particularly true in Washington State. Some of my academic colleagues who have moved to Washington State in recent years describe us as being terminally polite. And that may, so parents may be reluctant to confront other parents who they don't know well who have different beliefs. Clearly, immunizing parents understand the benefits of immunization, and we want to motivate them and empower them to spread the word. We learn from focus groups that when parents are giving compelling information about the state, the immunizing parents I'm referring to here, about the issue of exemptions, they get motivated because they recognize that protecting their child means living in a community that is well immunized. So our goal is to stimulate peer-to-peer communication about the value of a fully vaccinated community. And I'm only able to go briefly sketch these two interventions. Another workshop later this week, numbered, I think, I-4, will go into some of the detail of our intervention. So in the community intervention, we're going to have basically all parent volunteer advocates. They're very localized campaigns. We're going to provide technical support, and we will have a community-specific toolkit. And the whole emphasis is on peer-to-peer communication rather than outside experts. And the evaluation of that component will focus principally on surveys, focus groups, and media monitoring to see if, in fact, we have been able to tip the balance in favor of immunization. Our concern is that increasingly the social norm in our community for the vaccine hesitant for the uncertain parent is in fact to be persuaded by the noise of the vaccine anti-vaccine folks out there and to say, I'm going to pick among these. I'm going to space them out. I'm going to do it with meaning no disrespect. We sometimes say parents in our community want to order their immunizations like they do their lattes. And that's what we're trying to get to move beyond. So thank you very much for your attention. That's what we're trying to do, and I look forward to your questions.